Okay, we're doing now something called Muksa Machmas Mius. Muksa Machmas Mius.
It's
Mius, the sauna. Mius means disgusting. Something which is Muksa because it's disgusting. Let us recall that the concept of Muksa is all about that which you're not going to use over Shabbos. Things that are out of the realm of utility. They're just you're pushing them out of your mind, as we saw before. If it's something which is expensive, you are putting it in a specific place and you're not touching it. You don't want anybody else to touch it. So that's mukta generally, right? You're mekatzeh midato. You're pushing it out of your mind. So the mukta that we introduced 2 weeks ago was called mukta machmas mius. Something which you push out of your mind, not because it's expensive, not because it will lead to an iser, but rather because it is just something disgusting. So we started with the Mishnah on Shabbos Daf Mem Dalet Amud Aleph 44a, and the Mishnah tells us that a person is allowed to take a brand new lamp, Metalsalin Ner Chadash. You're allowed to take a brand new lamp. Now, why are you allowed to take a brand new lamp? Why not? It's a lamp. You can use lamps. Now, you might not use it for kindling, but you could use it for candy. You could use it for water. I don't know. What do you use lamps for? The point is, it's a brand new lamp. It's fine. Aval lo yashan. But you're not allowed to use an old one. Why not? Presumably because it's disgusting. If you look at Rashi at the top of the page, so Rashi on the Mishnah, Metatzlon Erchara, She'en Omos. You'll have to take a new one because it's not disgusting. And therefore, v'chazil ishtamushe, it is befitting to be used, lehedja, right, outright. Shalodalak bon ner me'olam, because there was never, ever a candle lit on this thing. Now, what is interesting to point out, and now we're just sort of like learning together, just going to go on some tangents here. Why does Rashi have to say that last phrase? Shalodalak bon ner me'olam. Right. If the real issue is whether it's disgusting, so what does it matter if it was ever lit? I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure. It could be that the second you light it, it's disgusting. That could be. It could also be that Rashi, when he says Chazil Ishtamushe Lahedya, that it's befitting or it is appropriate to use outright, right away, what he means is you don't have to have a good reason to use it. Right? If you remember back to Klishim Lachtel Hetzer, Klishim Lachtel Isser, there are different kinds of vessels. There are some vessels which are just naturally usable. A napkin holder, you can use it wherever you want. Whether you need it, whether you don't need it, whether you need the spot, whether you don't need the spot, whether you need the actual holder or not, you can just move it. It's not mukta. And then there's Klishim Lachtel Isser. Klishim Lachtel Isser, like a hammer, is designated for a prohibited purpose. You are only allowed to use it if you need to, if you need the space or you need the hammer to open up something. So that's where it's not an outright allowance. You're not allowed to use the hammer outright because it's a hammer. It's designated for a prohibited purpose. It could very well be, we actually discussed this way back when in Klish Malachto Lister, when does something become Malachto Lister? I just bought a frying pan. Just bought it, brought it home from the store. Now, is it a frying pan? It says that on the label, but I haven't used it as such yet. Right now, this is my charger that I put under my plate. The frying, it said frying pan, but I like using frying pans as chargers. For the moment, it's not yet a klisha malachta lister. So perhaps that's what Rashi means when he says this phrase, Chazil Ishtamushe Lahedja, you could use it outright. Why? Shol Dolz Boner Meholam. You've never used it for a prohibited purpose. It's not yet a Klisha Malachta Lister. Maybe.
So even if that first lighting doesn't make it disgusting, the fact that you've lit it and used it.
That's a good question. Because what Baj is pointing out is, and what I was getting to also is, we have perhaps, if that were the case of Rashi, I don't remember how the Gemara continues, but if that were the case in Rashi, we have overlapping muktas here. Now, the word muktzah just means you can't use it. So you can't use it, you can't use it, you can't use it. It doesn't matter why. But it seems like we might have a situation where we have a kli shel malach d'lister, and on top of that, we have muktzah machmas mius. Now, it's important to notice that, because if it's only kli shel malach d'lister, so then it's like a hammer. You could use it if you need it. If you need the spot where the lamp is, you could move it. Your Shabbos licht is on the dining room table, so you can move it if you need the spot. That gets into other things. We'll talk about that a different time. But the point is, if it's only a kli shel malach d'lister, so then there are allowances to use it. However, once you then slap on top of that, it's a muktzah machmas mius. It's not just because it's designated for prohibited purposes, but it's also because it's disgusting. You've used it enough that it's the oil residue or the wax or whatever it is. Now it's a disgusting thing. I'm not using it for anything. So once it's muktzah machmas mius, you're not allowed to move it at all. There's no such allowance like kli shel malach d'lister. If you remember, we talked about that when it comes to when it came to how to define what were we trying to define back then. We had the machlokas whether or not kli shel malach d'lister was. Yeah, when we talked about whether kli shel malach d'lister was just another category of muktzah, or was it its own thing, and we said that if it was a category of muktzah, so you wouldn't have these allowances, you wouldn't be allowed to move it for a good reason. There's no such thing by muktzah. By muktzah, you're not allowed to move it. If it's muktzah, it's muktzah. Kli shel malach d'lister's got its own thing. Now we colloquially conflate the two, right? We say that they're all the same thing. It's the things you can't move, things you can't touch, things you can't use. But the truth is that they're separate categories, and they have separate rules that govern when you can and cannot use them. So that's why it's important here from Rashi. It sounds like lo dalek bo ner me'olam means you've never yet established this vessel as a kli shel malach d'lister. It's not yet a prohibited thing or used for prohibited purposes.
Disgusting subject.
Yes.
Disgusting to you, I might.
That could be. That could be. We haven't gotten there yet. At this point, the Gemara is going to sort of take us a few stages until we get to that conclusion. But you're right in the sense that we've seen this before also. If you remember, we just talked about this by Muktzah Machmas Chiseron Kis. Right? We talked about if Zuckerberg has his phone break, that's different than me. But nonetheless, we said, at least from the Alter Rebbe, from the Baal Tanya, we said that doesn't make a difference. That's not subjective. So yes, there could be levels of disgustingness, but there are certain things that are objectively disgusting. And I would think that the way that we define it is more about, you know, what the general person would say. Who is the general person? I don't know. But we'll ask Poskim who the general person, what the general person. That's a question that they ask. Oh, Shirin, right? An Amma. How big is an Amma? It's your forearm. Well, whose forearm? You know? So we settle on a specific amount, or at least we settle on different opinions of what that amount is. But so here also, there could be subjectivity to it, but it is nonetheless defined in some way. And if you look at the next Rashi, lo yashan, but not an old lamp, demukta machmas miyosu, because it is pushed aside, this is the third line down in Rashi in the top right, it is pushed aside from your mind because it is disgusting. Good. So that's really the Mishnah. The one exception to that rule, what was the one exception, remember? And the verbiage here is important. The words that are used, chutz min haner hadolik b'shabbos. The one exception to the rule is, you can never use a lamp which is burning on Shabbos. Which is burning. Hadolik is in the present tense. That's going to be important. While it is burning, while it is lit, you can't move it. That was the opinion of Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah. Why is Rabbi Shimon's opinion important? Because we know Rabbi Shimon very well. Rabbi Shimon's the one that says, innocent until proven guilty. Right? Usable until proven muktzah. The default is, you're allowed to use everything. And here, Rabbi Shimon has an exception. Here, Rabbi Shimon says, while it's burning, you're not allowed to use it. Why not? Right, nothing to do with muktzah. It happens to be in the context of muktzah, but Rabbi Shimon wants us to make sure, he's reminding us, I know I said you could move everything. When I said that, there are other reasons why you may not be able to move, not because of muktzah, but because you're going to put out the flame. Right, so Rabbi Shimon's come to say, I'm not just a, laissez-faire, do whatever you want kind of guy. There are still some things you have to worry about. Just when it comes to Muktzah, you don't have to worry about it as much. Comes the Gemara, and the Gemara now quotes for us the Tosefta, Tana Rabbanan. A lot of rabbis. No. Tana Rabbanan, the rabbis learned, Mitzhaltzlin ner chadash aval lo yashan, to Rabbi Yehuda. You are allowed to move a brand new candle, but not an old one. That's according to Rabbi Yehuda. That makes sense. The Mishnah didn't quote him. We assumed it. But why does Rabbi Yehuda think that? Rabbi Yehuda thinks everything's Aser, right? Rabbi Yehuda thinks everything's Muktzah. The question for Rabbi Yehuda is not, why does he allow you, why does he prohibit moving the disgusting lamp? The question for Rabbi Yehuda is, why does he allow you to take the not disgusting lamp? Rabbi Yehuda thinks everything's Aser. So that's a question we'll have to deal with a different time. Rabbi Meir Omer, Rabbi Meir comes along and asks the opinion. Comes Rabbi Meir and says, you are allowed to take all lamps, except that which was lit on Shabbos. That's an interesting phrase. Shehidliku b'Shabbos.
As opposed to currently burning.
It's not burning right now, but it was used on Shabbos. How could it be burning on Shabbos?
How could it be lit on Shabbos?
How could it be lit on Shabbos? Depends how you understand the word lit. It doesn't mean kindled. It means it was lit, meaning it is burning.
Still burning.
It's your Shabbos candles.
Yeah.
Right? You lit them before Shabbos, and now they are lit on Shabbos. Shehidliku b'Shabbos means that they are burning. They are, the flame was on at some point over Shabbos. Right now the flame is out, and the lamp is empty.
So Rabbi Shimon, if it's not disgusting, would let you move it.
Okay, so now let's look at Rabbi Shimon.
Even if it's out now,
even if there's no flame, you're not allowed to move it.
Okay.
You're not allowed to move it. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Chutz Menedar Hadolik b'Shabbos. The only kind of lamp you're not allowed to use is that which is burning right now. What is the difference between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon? We talked about this 2 weeks ago, but just to review. What's the difference between Rabbi Meir, who says that any lamp that was burning on Shabbos, even if it's not burning right now, is still Muktzah, as opposed to Rabbi Shimon, who says, as long as it's not burning right now, you can move it. We explained that according to the laws of Muktzah, you could understand the trigger in very different ways. According to Rabbi Meir, the trigger is the onset of Shabbos. The second Shabbos starts, we take an inventory of everything in the house. Right? This was the labels for label story that we talked about last week that Sarita says she saw a show about. Right? The second Shabbos starts, everything's got a label. Everything is either usable or not usable, and that's its status for the rest of Shabbos. This, by the way, is also a very important point that's brought up in the Gemara's in Beitza about Yontif. I'm trying to remember the context of it. The concept is, at least the wording is, Migo diskatsai l'chatsiyoma iskatsai l'kuliyoma. Once something is mukta for a little bit of the day, it's mukta for the whole day. Now, this is a little bit different because this is really about the onset of Shabbos. Something can become mukta in the middle of Shabbos too. We'll talk about it a different time. But according to Rabbi Meir, we take a snapshot of everything in the house at the onset of Shabbos and we try to see what is and what isn't usable. Now, it sounds like Rabbi Meir would hold like Rabbi Yehuda in a default situation, but if something is being used at the onset of Shabbos, so that's going to dictate its muktzah status. If it is, I can't think of any other examples besides fire, but if there's a fire of some kind at the onset of Shabbos, so that thing now becomes usher. It becomes muktzah for the rest of Shabbos. What would Rabbi Shimon say back to that? Rabbi Shimon's opinion is, I know that we like to look at things at the onset of Shabbos, but I can preempt what happens at the onset of Shabbos. If I know, when I'm lighting the candles, Shabbos, Friday afternoon, I know that that candle is going to burn, and then it's going to go out. And I'm having in mind that after it burns out, I'm going to use that lamp, so then I'm allowed to use it. Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion you can preempt that trigger. You could give a caveat. You can have a carve-out. Yes, everything's status is determined at the onset of Shabbos, unless I preemptively dictate that that thing shouldn't be You know, I preemptively label it. Let's say it like that, right? The labels aren't automatic, but I can put a label on it beforehand.
Even a Shabbos
candle, according to Rabbi Shimon, yeah. There are other complications of Shabbos. Oh, so there are other reasons why it could be mukta.
Yeah.
It could be mukta machmas chisar and kis. These could be very expensive or very, you know, precious candlesticks.
You're saying you can't use it as something else.
Yeah. Well, also remember now that we're talking about the lamps of the times of the Mishnah.
Right.
The lamps of the times of the Mishnah were not these very stick-like structures where you'd put, you know, paraffin oil in and let it burn out. These were like jugs, and they would have the wicks sticking out of them, basically. So jugs can be used as cups. They can be used as receptacles or whatever. So it depends, but let's imagine it like that. Okay. However, says Rabbi Shimon, right, so he says, except for that which is lit at that moment, because that's a separate problem, that's about extinguishing. However, kavsa, once it's extinguished, right, the word lechabot means to extinguish, mutzul tasala, then you are allowed to move it. Because there's no longer a concern about you extinguishing anything. However, says even Rabbi Shimon, aval, kos, vikara, v'ashashis, lo yizizemim komam. But a cup, a bowl, and a, I don't remember how to translate ashashis, a jug of some kind, you're not allowed to move it from its place. Rashi says, v'afil kavahaner, even if the light went out. Rashi says that ashashis is a big cup of glass. A big lamp, glass lamp. Okay, so let's see here. We have not explained that. According to Rabbi Shimon, that shouldn't be a problem.
Right.
Right? Rabbi Shimon's the one that says everything's mutter until proven mukta. So we'll have to come back to that. So this is, we didn't look at this yet last week yet, or 2 weeks ago. V'Rabbi Eliezer bar Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Eliezer, the son of Rabbi Shimon. Right, he was the one that went with him to the cave. Right, we're talking about Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, so no? Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon, Omer, mistapik min haner hakava. You are allowed to mistapik. Anyone know what the word mistapik means? Mistapik means to get use from, I think. Like sipuk hanefesh, satisfied, you can be satisfied from the lamp, which is the lamp which is extinguished. Umin Hashem and Hametaftef, and from the oil which is dripping off of it. Va'afilu b'shashaner dolik. You could even get, let's say your lamp is dripping, you could even collect that oil while the lamp is lit. You could collect that oil and you can use it for your salad dressing.
Okay.
Whatever it is, I don't know. Back then, obviously, the cleanliness was a little different. The point being, even the oil, which is burning, is still usable oil. Now, I can't touch it while it's in there because I'm going to cause it to extinguish potentially. But if it's coming off of it, so that's usable oil. That's my oil. I prepared for it before Shabbos. I said, when I put this oil in, I'm going to use any leftover oil for my salad. So that's what he's doing. Amar Abaye comes along and says that Rabbi Eliezer is dancing at two weddings here. What's going on? Amar Abaye, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon, Savrala Kavua Bachada. What does that mean? Savrala Kavua Bachada. He holds like his father in one thing. Upali Galei Bachada.
The other
one, he disagrees. Like plog, you know, the word plog that we have on Friday afternoon. We daven every day plog right now. It's called plog because it splits the afternoon. So plog. So here also, he splits from him. He diverges from his father. In what way? If I were teaching you Gemara structures, I would tell you this is a structure. That sometimes, whenever you have this phrase, It's going to introduce it, and then it's going to explain it. So here he says, Rabbi Yezer, Savra HaKavu 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 Savra HaKavu 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 the Leisle Muktzah. He agrees with his father, Rabbi Shimon, in saying there's no such thing as Muktzah. And therefore, even though this candle was burning at one point, I can still use the oil. The oil is assumed to be usable. Upaling alei b'chada, but he disagrees. Why? Z'ilu avua savar kava in, if it's extinguished, in, the word in is perhaps one of the most misleading words in Aramaic. When we look at the word ein, we say it means not. In Aramaic, it means yes. In. Savar kava in. If it's extinguished, you're not allowed to use it. Sorry, if it's extinguished, you are allowed to use it. In. Lo kava, if it's not extinguished, lo. You're not allowed to use it. How does Rabbi Eliezer disagree with that? He said that if there's shemen coming out of the lamp, you're still alive. But the lamp is still being lit. The lamp is still not extinguished. The ihu means and he, meaning Rabbi Eliezer, savar afagav to lokava, even though it's not extinguished yet. He believes he can still use the oil. Aval kos vekara ba'ashashas lo yizizim imkoma. This, I think, is just a quote from what we said before. I think we're done with, Rabbi Eliezer. I'm not sure, but I think we're done.
Can you tell us what the problem is with the kos and the ka'ara and this other, what the problem is?
No, that's what we're talking about now. That's what we're about to say. We're introducing that right now.
Right,
so we just quoted the Tosefta. That Tosefta has a couple interesting additions that our Mishnah doesn't have. And now with those additions, we're going to analyze it. The more we can sort of pile on to the discussion, the more we'll be able to understand the nuances. So for instance, we just learned something about Rabbi Shimon that we would not have necessarily learned without understanding Rabbi Eliezer. The fact that we quoted Rabbi Eliezer allowed us to further elucidate what Rabbi Shimon's opinion is. Right? When Rabbi Shimon says in the Mishnah, the only time you're not allowed to use the nair is when it's burning. So we don't know what that means. Meaning maybe that means that I can't take oil out of the lamp itself. But if some oil falls out of the lamp, I could use it. Because that oil is not being burned. Then comes Rabbi Eliezer to say, oh, if the oil is falling out, you can use the oil. Well, if he's saying that, that means his father wasn't saying that, right? So by implication, we can understand once you have more information, even if it's not about the people themselves and their opinions, once we have more information, other opinions in the conversation, we can understand by implication what the original opinions are. So Ad Kan, we've learned already a little bit about Rabbi Shimon's opinion, that while he is very blasé-faire about letting you do whatever you want, innocent until proven mukta, he does have some limitations, right? He does have, restrictions. You're not allowed to use oil while it's being burnt. Okay, sounds like a low bar, right?
So can we take that to today and say the wax that falls down?
Presumably, the problem is what are you going to do with it? But yeah, in a theoretical sense,
yeah.
If you were a wax collector or something, I don't know. Yeah. So now the Gemara is going
to
say,
wait.
Going to change the shape of. It depends what you're using it for. There's nothing necessarily wrong with that. If it was a big structure and you were knocking it down and you were ruining it from its structure, so that's one thing. But you can open up bags on Shabbos, you can undo plastic on Shabbos, things like that. So it's not absolutely you can't destroy things on Shabbos. It depends what you're destroying, how you're destroying it. But yeah. So let's see. The Gemara now is saying, it's quoting from before, from the Tosefta. Again, we're using the words of the Tosefta to further clarify what our Mishnah means. And the words of the Tosefta were aval kos tekara v'ashashas lo yizimim mekomam. The cup, the bowl, and the big glass lamp, you are not allowed to move them from their place. Ask the Gemara a simple question. Mai shna hani. Why are these different? Mai shna, right? The word shna is like mishana or shonel or nishtana, right? Ma nishtana halayla, is that right? Mai shna. What's the difference between this cup? Rabbi Shimon just said that if I have a lamp and it's not burning, I'm allowed to use it. But a cup I can't use? What? How do you make heads or tails of that? So says Ula, I've got an easy answer. Amar Ula, Seifa Asan L'Rabbi Yehuda. I don't know what those words mean. Seifa means the end. Asan means we've come, and L'Rabbi Yehuda means to Rabbi Yehuda. Meaning,
we've come to the end.
We've come, the end of the Tosefta is coming along the lines in accordance to Rabbi Yehuda. Now, this is one of those things you kind of have to squint a little bit. The Tosefta quotes Rabbi Yehuda, then it quotes Rabbi Meir, then it quotes Rabbi Shimon, and then it has this line about the cups.
And we think it's Rabbi Shimon, but it's really Rabbi
Yehuda. It would seem to be Rabbi Shimon, because that's the last person we mentioned, and we didn't say it was anybody else. Says, Ula, no, you got it all wrong. That's really a further clarification of Rabbi Yehuda, the first opinion that we said. We just threw in the other opinions while we were at it. Right, well, basically, you could say it like this, you know, Rabbi Yehuda believes that you can't move any of these things. Oh, by the way, Rabbi Meir doesn't think that, and Rabbi Shimon doesn't think that. And also, you can't move the cups, and you can't, right? So, right, so basically, you're understanding that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon were parenthetical, right? Unfortunately, in the times of the Mishnah, they didn't believe in punctuation. So we don't know how to punctuate any of this stuff, which is why it's so intimidating to look at a Daf Gemara, right? You have to really understand the cadence and the rhythm of the Gemara to know what's going on. So that's what the Gemara is saying here. Ula is saying that the end of it is Rabbi Yehuda. And when it says the cup and the bowl and the lamp are off limits, that's only according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon, just like he said by the lamp before, Rabbi Shimon would say that's fine. You can move that just like you can move the Nair. Says the Gemara, Maskifla. Maskifla is always an introduction of a question. Maskifla. Maskifla Marzutra. If you didn't know that Maskifla meant a question, you would know it from the next phrase. Ihachi. What's the word Ihachi mean? If that's so. I in the Aramaic means im. Im hachi. If that's true, my aval. What does the word aval mean? But. But the cup and the bowl and the lamp, you, what was the phrase in the Mishnah, in the Tosefta? But the bowl you can't use. Right now, if you have the word but in front of that sentence, what must come before the but? The opposite, right? Right? You don't say the word but to say the same thing. You would say ve'od, or and similarly, but if you're going to say the word aval, then you're shifting gears from what came before. What did Rabbi Yehuda say before that? Mitatlo ner chadash, aval lo yashan. Says Rabbi Yehuda, you're allowed to move a brand new lamp, but not an old lamp. But not a cup. What do you mean, but not a cup? It should say, you're not allowed to move the old lamp, or the cup, or the bowl, or the... Why is it saying, but you're not allowed to use the old lamp, but you're not allowed to use the cup. Wait, that's not a but. That's the ode. And also, or furthermore. So why is it saying the word aval? So maskev la marzutra, ihachi, if that's the case, that the word, that line about the kos v'kara b'ashashes, about the cup, the bowl, and the lamp are according to Rabbi Yehuda, so then my aval, what is that word aval doing there? That should be in like quotation marks, if one were punctuating. My aval. What does it mean, the word aval? Ella Amar Marzutra. Rather, says Marzutra, I've got my own explanation. Ula's explanation was, oh, that line, don't worry about that. That's not Rabbi Shimon. That's really Rabbi Yehuda. Says Marzutra, you can't say that because the word aval. Ella, really, la'olam, really. That's what the word la'olam means here. My son has la'olam on his vocabulary test this week. La'olam. And he's gotten it wrong a couple of times. He keeps saying, to the world. It really means for him, what does it mean, la'olam? La'olam. Me'atav yad olam. Forever. Right? The word la'olam means forever. For us, in Gemara, it doesn't mean that either. Right? For us in Aramaic, it means really. Really, la'olam, Rabbi Shimon. Really, that line, that you cannot, however, aval, but you can't use the cup, is going according to Rabbi Shimon. So now we've got a head scratcher. How is it that Rabbi Shimon is going to say you're not allowed to use this cup? It's not burning. There's nothing wrong with it right now. So why would Rabbi Shimon be against using the cup? What do you think? Before we look at it, any ideas?
Didn't we talk a long, long time ago about you might not even be allowed to clear the table for theirs?
Okay. That was the bones. That was bones. Okay. You're thinking. It's good. So remember the last thing that Rabbi Shimon said. The last thing Rabbi Shimon said was, if it's extinguished, you're allowed to move it. So now this line, aval, is following that line, right? You're allowed to use it, but the implication is, if we were just reading the words, but if a cup, bowl, or lamp were extinguished, you're not allowed to use that. A nair, which was extinguished, you're allowed, which is also a lamp. But a bowl or a cup, you would not be allowed. That's how we would read it. Yes. That's the assumption. If the word aval is really following the previous line, which is once it's extinguished, you're allowed to move it. So this one is also once it's extinguished, you're not allowed to move it. That's the aval. Presumably there was oil in it. Yeah. So let's see. So now, what is the difference between Rabbi Shimon, the first part of Rabbi Shimon about the lamp, and the second part of Rabbi Shimon about the cup? V'chi kashari. Anyone know what kashari means? Shari means allowed. I don't know if there's another Hebrew equivalent to that, sorry. V'chi kashari Rabbi Shimon v'ner zuta. When is it that Rabbi Shimon believes you are allowed to use the lamp after it's being extinguished? When it is a ner zuta. Does anyone know what the word zuta means? Trying to think if there's an example of it. Hold on. Zohar Zuta. There's another word, Zuta, from something. I can't think of it. I don't know. Zuta means small. Zuta means small. What does that have to do with anything? What does the size of the lamp have to do with anything? So remember back to what we thought about the Rabbi Shimon. How is it that Rabbi Shimon disagreed with Rabbi Meir? Rabbi Meir said, if at any point this thing was lit at the onset of Shabbos, so at any point over Shabbos, you're not allowed to use that. He says, Rabbi Shimon, no, you're allowed to use that once it goes out. Why? I thought the onset of Shabbos is what triggers the mukta. So how does Rabbi Shimon say that's not a problem? He preempts it. What does he preempt it with? Before he lights the candle, the person is saying to themselves, after this candle is extinguished, I'll be able to use the lamp. I'll be able to use, when the fire goes out, I'll be able to use the receptacle for something else. When is the only time you can say that? Wait, in what circumstance does that make sense? If the fire is going to go out. If it's a smaller candle. If it's a big candelabra, if it's a big jug of oil, and this thing's going to last you the whole day, so I don't care that it is extinguished. If you look at this candle, and it's got, you know, it's a Shiva Yartai candle, whatever, that thing's not going out anytime soon. When you light that candle, you don't have in mind that you're going to use it later. In your mind, that thing's going to be on for all Shabbos. So when it's such a big candle, which we're now assuming is the cup, the bowl, and this other ashashas, this big jug, this glass jug, so then the person doesn't have in mind that they're going to use it. And therefore, even Rabbi Shimon, who typically says innocent until proven mukta, this is it being proven mukta. When something is so big, and is so it's destined to be used for such a long time, no one's preemptively thinking, oh, I'm going to use that later, because it's going to be on for the rest of Shabbos. Now it just happens to be that it's 10:30 in the morning, you're seeing it, well, you're at shul at 10:30, it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and you see, oh my gosh, I thought that Yahrzeit candle was going to be on all Shabbos. Turns out, there was a wind, there was a gust, it blew out. Let me go use it. No, says Rabbi Shimon. Before Shabbos, you did not think you were going to use that candle, and now even though it's not Even though it's not lit, it's not burning, you're still not allowed to use it because it was out of your mind. It was like you set it aside. Even Rabbi Shimon thinks that.
Doesn't this cause a problem though for the person who holds it? You can use the oil that's dripping.
Oh, that's his son. That's his son. That's Rabbi Eliezer. You're right. You're right. 100%.
This is going to burn. And so the fact that it's not burning, now you're going to use it for salad? I mean...
Yeah, okay. That's everything. But yeah, no, Rabbi Eliezer would definitely disagree with this. This is only according to Rabbi Shimon. It's only according to Rabbi Shimon, the father. Rabbi Eliezer would disagree with his father on this one. So for most of this, it's all automatic. Meaning, when we look at a candle, we will determine a person has the... Yeah, well, so a lot of this is, it's not deliberate like that. We are looking at a person lighting a candle and we're saying that person has in mind, whether we ask him or not, he has in mind that he's going to use that candle later. And therefore, it's like he's preemptively using it. He's preemptively preparing it for afterwards. But if it's a big candle, we're going to look at that situation and say, that person does not intend on using that later, and therefore he's not allowed to. That's going to Rabbi Shimon. That's what he's saying here. Let's just read the line again. Amar marzutra la'olam Rabbi Shimon. Really, it's going to Rabbi Shimon. V'chi kashar Rabbi Shimon b'ner zuta. Why did da'atei alavei? Did da'atei alavei? Alave is a fancy sounding word. What? Da'ate means his mind is upon it. His mind is on it. Alave means on it. Like alav. Right? His mind is on it. Da'ato alav in Hebrew. His mind is on it, meaning he's assuming his impression is he's going to use it later because it's a small candle. Da'ate alave. Aval hani, when it comes to these, the cup, the bowl, and the big lamp, dinathishi, that are, just by context, you know what this means? These are, as opposed to the candle, which is small, these are nefeshi, they're big. I don't know why the word nefesh means big. It must be connected to a soul or something, I don't know. The nefeshi, they're bigger. So then, lo, they're not, meaning you're not allowed to use those. That's how we understand it with Rabbi Shimon. What should we do here? Okay, so this is a good Gemara methodology little line here. V'hatanya, what does the word v'hatanya always mean? Almost always, except for all the times it doesn't. V'hatanya is always a question. The magic letter in Gemara learning is vav. If the vav is ever at the beginning of a sentence, it's almost always a question. And doesn't it say? I don't know why, it's just how it is. You get used to it. V'ha is especially a question. V'ha is like, and hark. That's literally how my Gemara teacher taught it to me in middle school. And hark. V'ha. And hark. And behold. Behold, Tanya. What is Tanya?
We've learned
in a Brisa.
Okay.
Easy way to remember that is the word, the letter Yud in Tanya is Brayita, as opposed to Tanan is a Mishnah. Tanan and Tanya were in the Torah bowl. Who won? Tanya, because he was a little brighter. Okay? So Tanya means brighter. The Hatanya, doesn't it say in a brisa, Mosar Hashemen Shebiner v'Shebekara, the extra oil. Mosar means extra, right? Yoter. Yos Moser Hashem and Shebiner, the extra oil which is in the lamp, the Shebekara which is in the bowl, Asur, it's prohibited. That makes sense according to what we just said, which is that it's a big bowl. But wait a second, that's not the end of the Brisa. Because comes Rabbi Shimon, the Rabbi Shimon Matir. Rabbi Shimon says, you're allowed to use the leftover oil. What gives? You just told me that if it's a bowl and it's bigger and it has a lot more oil, then even Rabbi Shimon would say that leftover oil is not allowed to be used. And here Rabbi Shimon in the Brisa is responding to someone who says you can't use the oil, and he's saying you can use the oil in the bowl. So which one is it? Says, so whoa, slow down. That Brisa never said how big the bowl was. Says the Gemara, Dumya Diner. Dumya Diner. Sahasam Kara Dumya Diner. Over there in that brisa, it's a bowl, yes, but it's similar to a small candle. That brisa is talking about a small bowl. And that small bowl, if it has extra oil, you were expecting to use the bowl, and therefore, if it goes out, you can use the oil too. Dumya Diner. Hacha, however, our kara, our bowl that we just quoted before, where Rabbi Shimon said you're not allowed to use the oil that's left over, dumya dekos. That's a bowl which is similar to a cup, which is bigger. All right, I'm thinking of like, you know, like in Israel or Europe, they have like little cups for coffee, like little espressos. You know what I'm talking about? In America, we don't even try those. That's not it. That's not going to be nearly enough. Give me a grande. That's where we start, is grande. We'll work our way up from there, right? So that's what I'm thinking. It's like a little bowl. It's like a little, like a salt bowl. You ever see those bowls that you use for salt? Right? That's the kind of bowl that we're talking about there. But the bowl that we talked about before in the Tosefta, oh, that's a big bowl, like a cup. That's like a big gulp bowl. So there you have the back and forth Rabbi Shimon. In the end of the day, Rabbi Shimon believes that as long as a person can set their mind to the fact that they're going to be using this on Shabbos, even if it's lit right now, after it's extinguished, you can use it. If, however, it's a big thing where it's going to be lit for a very long time, a person is not preemptively thinking, I'm going to use that, because it's so big and so vast. And therefore, even if it does go out, happens to go out, he's not going to allow you to use it. That's different from Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer sounds like his son, even while it's burning and the oil is dripping, I'm still allowed to use it. We haven't elucidated, we haven't clarified Rabbi Eliezer entirely, but nonetheless, that's what it would sound like. Pamot. What is a pamot? Amar Rabbi Zera, pamot. A pamot, says Rashi, is a menorah shel matachas, ve'ena me'usa. It is a stainless steel. I don't know if it's stainless steel. It is a metal candelabra which does not get messy. That's what Rashi tells us. As if to say, I know we've been talking about, you know, other kinds of receptacles before, but really, we're really talking still about muktamach masmias. So the point here is pamot is a menorah that does not get disgusting. Pamot shiligubo b'shabas l'divra ha'matir aster l'divra ha'oser mutter. According to the one who says that you're allowed to use the candle, so then it's usher. According to the one who says you're not allowed to use the candle, so then the pamot would be mutter. Okay, let's do it. Lememra. There's another very important Gemara word. Lememra is always a rhetorical question. Is that to say, a memra is a saying, right? Like a Ma'amar, same word, but in Aramaic. Lememra, is that to say? Lememra, is that to say? De Rebbe Yehuda, muksa machmas mius islay, muksa machmas iser leislay. Are you telling me that when Rebbe Yehuda in our Mishnah said, you're not allowed to use an old candelabra, the only reason he said that was because it was disgusting? But if the issue was only the prohibition of it, meaning that you use it to light candles, that would not make it usher? That would not make it muktzah, according to Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda is the one that says everything's usher. Rabbi Yehuda is the one that says everything's muktzah. So how can you tell me that Rabbi Yehuda would say, Rabbi Yehuda is the one that says it's usher, would be the one to say muktzah here? V'hatanya, but don't you know the Braisa tells us, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kol Hanero Shematachas Metasel and Chutz Ben Haner, Shizikubo B'Shabbos. You're allowed to move all of the metal candelabras, except for the candle that was lit on Shabbos. So if this candelabra was lit on Shabbos, the Rabbi Yehuda would also say it's not allowed because it was used for an iser. Now, unclear what the first part means, but we're ignoring that for now. Ella, rather, Yitzmar, hach Yitzmar. If Rabbi Zeira said this line, what he really meant was this. This is how he meant, hach Yitzmar, this is how it was said. Am Rabbi Zeira, pamosh, shiliko lev shabbos, divrei hakol. Sorry, I should have let you guess that one. Dalet he means divrei hakol. Everyone agrees, aser. Everyone agrees that it's aser. But lohi likwa lev, if you never used it the light on yet. So then Divrei HaKol Mutzer, even Rabbi Yehuda would say it's okay. That's the beginning of our Mishnah, right? Mitzalflu Ner Chadash. You're allowed to take a new candelabra which has not yet been used. So in the end of the day, we have clarified all the shitas. We've got Rabbi Yehuda who says you can't use it unless it's never been used before. You can't move it unless it's never been used before as a candle. We have Rabbi Meir who says you're allowed to use any new candle, but if it's ever used on Shabbos, so then you're not allowed to use it. Unclear if Rabbi Meir would say a previously used candle. It sounds like he would be okay with that. And Rabbi Shimon says that even a candle which was lit on Shabbos is okay once it's extinguished and once that candle was small enough that you expected that to happen. And Rabbi Yehuda would even, and in the end of the day, we have this other separate statements that just further clarify that. Yeah. Next week, I'm not sure if we're going to continue this Gemara or not. Oh yeah, this is a buses question. It's connected, but it's not connected fully. All right, I'll continue the conversation of Muktamach Masmias. Ad Khan, according to Rabbi Shimon, does he believe in Muktamach Masmias? Muktamach Masmias again means, yeah. If it's disgusting, you're not allowed to touch it. Did we ever see Rabbi Shimon say that?
No.
He never said that.
No.
The only person that ever said that was Rabbi Yehuda, the first opinion of the Mishnah and the Braisa. Rabbi Shimon never even talked about Muktamach Masmias. So then it begs the question, how do we pass about Muktamach Masmias? In the end of the day, it's a mukta category that doesn't exist. But Mir Tashem will talk about it next week. Okay.